Oh, I do have. I've been sitting on this a little bit, and I've been trying to think about when I will bring it up.
Oh boy.
I have completed Tutorial Island.
You've completed tutorial. I wondered if you were gonna pull a sneaky or not.
Yep.
Give it a try. How is your should we do you want to intro the show and just shoot the shit about RuneScape for like 20 minutes?
Yeah, let's
Because
do that.
I've had a fucking week of shit we can talk about briefly.
Hello and welcome to Codex. It is a casual lore podcast. My name is Phil.
I'm Logan.
And this week we will be doing a mini follow-up topic to our last one that we did. This is about Red Lyrium, a good companion to previous Blue Lyrium. And I imagine you can guess the potential tenor of the Lyrium based on its Jedi color. But before we do that, Do you have a bright spot, Logan?
I think we have a joint bright spot, it seems like, just adventures in Gilanor.
Yeah, should I go first?
Yeah, maybe.
I have completed Tutorial Island.
You degenerate fool.
Yep. I was going to come in
all downhill.
I was going to come in here and I was going to rant to you about I have my first RuneScape gripe.
Oh yeah, there's plenty. Yeah.
Why is the bank in Lumbridge on the third floor?
Yeah, that's where it is.
That's really dumb. How am I supposed to find it? You just pull up the map and the map doesn't have floors and it's chaos.
Oh yeah. I can't tell you like how much less chaos it is now.
It's
it was awful. Not uncommon to like get lost and then just start a new account.
Oh,
you're just like, I don't know where the hell I am. I'll just make a new account because then I'll be in Lumbridge again.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's way cleaner up. But that's also why I would like definitely recommend having someone you can ping ideas off of to smooth out the various rough bumps that still exist in this game. It's way better. And I think it is in a playable state for like a normal human.
It is.
But
it is
if you
certainly
have someone to guide it a bit, I think that. It's a big difference.
Yeah, I think I went through the tutorial so that if we did want to end up doing something together, we would not have to deal with that barrier. And also, I was recording the last episode while I was doing it. So I was not reading anything. I was already having the primo experience of click on thing and hold space bar.
Yep. Yeah, I feel like that's solid tutorial business either way.
Yeah. And then,
that island is basically unchanged since the early 2000s, since RS2 launched.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I can believe
you can
that.
Tell. You can tell.
And then I think I spent another like 25 minutes standing in that bit, maybe just like a little bit north in Lumbridge where there's like four trees and two level one goblins walking around.
Yeah. And it's a good spot.
Killed me some goblins and chopped some trees. I think I'm level 5 wood cutting now or something.
That seems about right. That's a good first day.
So my
Gilanor.
My journey has begun.
How are you playing with the music on? I guess that's actually my first question.
I wasn't because I was editing the show and then I turned it on a little bit later, but
Okay, good.
I did have the ambient sounds going, which gave a good.
It's a vibe.
Yeah. It was
a cozy
feeling.
Vibe.
Yes.
Yeah. For such an old, simple thing, they like kind of thread the needle on what is just a little too much.
Yeah. Yeah. It's much more whimsical and cute than I had expected it to be.
Yeah. This is a very silly game. I've not included a lot of the like Monty Python-ness of it yet.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll have to go down that route soon. There was, I've had quite the week in the game. I did end up doing a master clue, which took me to a frozen island I had not been to in a long time. And I'm going to have to record like a 3-second clip of gameplay to send to you and give you no further context because it is,
all right.
I forgot. This game just does shit sometimes. Doesn't care. You think you understand, like, the boundaries of the fantasy that you are existing within, and it's just like, nah, fuck it, fairies are on the moon. You teleport to the moon now.
That's cool.
Yeah. So there's a number of moments like that where you're just like, okay, I like understand this version of high fantasy, and I get how this kind of works, and I totally understand your tone. And then just like
do something with it.
Yeah, like the rabbit from Holy Grail is in the game, basically.
Weird.
Okay. Yeah. Stuff like that. You're just like, oh yeah, that's right. Also that. You just do that sometimes. Which I appreciate.
Yeah, that's fun. It's nice that it doesn't take itself quite so seriously.
No. So yeah, my bright spot is also gonna be RuneScape this week. Winding back to when we were dicking around last week. I don't even know what we were doing. But I was logged in, and we ended up at Soul Wars for some reason.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes.
And we ended up at Soul Wars, and I don't remember why, but I hopped to World 2, I think it was. Yeah, World 2, which is still usually the most populated members world, as is tradition. And we found what was very clearly a bot farm.
Yes.
Doing all of the Soul Wars. Like, they had, some of them had over 60,000 points, some of them had over 120,000 points, and this game takes, you know, like 8 to 15 minutes to get up to 60 points.
Yeah.
So accounts that had done thousands of games. So that was kind of neat, because I just got to stomp around in a game full of bots and just kind of do my own Falador Massacre, basically, because they were all like level 60. So I ice bursted 40 bots, and that was neat. And that got me playing Soul Wars a whole bunch again. And I got kind of good at it, and I got kind of all right doing gear and prayer switching.
Okay.
So then I was like, man, I should finally bite the bullet and like try one of the harder things I have not done yet. So I looked up a guide for Tombs of Amasket, the raid that is designed to be soloable. And I watched like a 10-minute like refresher explainer kind of video.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh boy, this is significantly more shit to keep track of than I'm willing to do today. So then I ended up at the Gauntlet, which is a neat place we've not talked about, in the elven city of Prithdinas. And it's like a little dungeon crawl. It's like a little randomly generated dungeon crawl minigame. In RS3, there was a whole skill called Dungeoneering, which had a similar concept. And you kind of, you get dumped into like a semi-randomized tile set, and you go in without any equipment. You get some tools as you drop in, and then you kind of farm for resources, craft all your supplies and gear, and then do some kind of fight.
Oh, fun. So it's like its own like mini league almost.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like this little self-contained, the gauntlet specifically, at least as opposed to engineering, is quick. It's not a whole skill. It's just a mini game. So the standard one, you drop in, you have 10 minutes to gather your stuff together, and then you get teleported into this room with a big crystalline dog, deer, beastie thing.
Okay.
And it's a pretty tough fight. And I am like pretty good at it now. I've got about 30kc in, and right before we logged on to do this, I got the pet as a drop, which is real dumb.
Nice.
Got
is it just the tiny
gauntlet
version of the?
Yeah, it's this little crystal, beastie. Little crystal deer dog wolf pup looking thing. The Hunliff is the name of the big one, and this one is called a Youngliff.
Oh,
it's just a little guy.
Yeah, that's cute.
So yeah, got super, super spoon fed on that. That was a 1 in 2,000 drop that I hit after 30-ish attempts.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, it doesn't do anything.
It was cute.
The other thing on that drop table was 164 million gold weapon, but
the drop bit higher on that one.
I'll take the pet. No, same 1 in 2K. Everything.
Wow.
And then there's a more difficult version of the gauntlet you can enter, which is what I'm working towards. That's the corrupted version, and there the weapon is only a 1 out of 150 drop, so okay. It's far more likely. And the pet comes down to like 1 in 800, I think.
Okay. But also probably takes longer and is more difficult.
They resource cut down the prep time to 750 instead of 10 minutes, and everything hits you harder.
Cool.
And it is tough. I am close. I am really close to being able to do it. And it is by far the hardest thing I've ever tried in this game. So that's neat.
Nice.
Neat to finally be working towards some of those end game PVM challenges that I had not really intended on doing.
Yeah, that's cool. That's fun.
Good week of RuneScape.
Yeah, we did it. Both of us. Fortunately and unfortunately, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, for both of us, really.
I'll report back when I edit this episode, and we'll see how degenerate it becomes.
Yeah, you gotta like walk over to a fishing spot or something for that edit process and just zone out and Catherby fishing for lobsters.
Yeah, I'll find a really good straight shot where I can just chop down those trees and then just make my way all the way back into Lumbridge.
Yeah, there you go.
That's living right there.
That's why we get up in the morning.
Yeah. So speaking of burning it all down with fires that you make.
Sure.
It's
bad guy lyrium.
It's bad guy lyrium. We
because the other stuff was super chill and cool.
Well, the other stuff was super chill and cool, and the bad guys got a hold of it and made it bad. This shit's just bad.
It's just all the way bad.
Yeah, we're gonna start with a spooky story. The best way for these episodes to begin. This is pulled from a Dragon Age 2 codex entry.
Okay.
But if you will just enter the theater of the mind with me, and we will have a fun chat about a taig deep underground.
I'm gonna go dim my lights real quick.
There you go. Very important. Get the mood right. Put a little red in there. Thousands of years before the present day, before even the rise of Darkspawn, House Valdecine single-handedly supplied lyrium to the rest of the Dwarven Empire. One day, however, they shut their doors and did not open them to anyone, not even the king or a visiting paragon. After days of silence, the doors were finally opened, but they did not find anyone inside, nor evidence of what had happened. They only found a red lyrium idol that was purportedly worshipped and a staff of strange metal which looked like lyrium. In response, the Dwarven King ordered the idol and the staff to be left inside, untouched, and sealed the taig forever. Such was the danger that the existence of the taig was stricken from the memories so that it could be completely forgotten.
Bum, bum, bum. It's like the refrigerator all over again.
It really is the refrigerator all over again. You end up going to this taig in Dragon Age 2. It's like one of the main missions that you do. You like go through the deep roads, and then you come to this long forgotten, like a taig is kind of a city, kind of a mansion. Like it's a its own like big self-sustaining village, usually owned by a large family in like Dwarven ways. And you go there because Varric Tethrys, the chatty dwarf who is your best friend in that game, he and his brother are seeking the treasure. And it turns out the treasure that they're seeking is this red lyrium idol, and then things transpire. But it's kind of a good setup for what is ultimately going to be bad guy lyrium, because it is lyrium, just in the same way that it was that we talked about last time, where it's this incredibly deadly to mages thing, and it is very addictive to the Templars. The only difference here is that this is it's super lyrium. It's more potent, more addictive, and more bad in all general ways.
Do we know why?
Kind of. And that's kind of what makes it red.
Okay.
But before we get into what makes it super bad lyrium, the real like background to red lyrium itself is that it is new. Like it is generally new in the world and has only really been discovered recently. So the Dragon Age 2 story takes place, I think like 20 years before the Veilguard. And that's only like 1 or 2 years, or maybe at the same time as Dragon Age Origins. So like the playable Dragon Age universe is incredibly condensed, and red lyrium begins showing up in Dragon Age 2 and then becomes like a major factor in Dragon Age 3 Inquisition. So it's like very, very new. And the dwarves themselves have never encountered it before. Like besides that idol in, well, we're not going to deal with the calendar system in Dragon Age because it's a whole thing, but
calendars are a nightmare.
Yeah, calendars are a nightmare. Fantasy calendars are even worse. We'll have to do a whole episode on fantasy calendars because they're obnoxious almost always. But
this game has one.
Of course it does. Of course it does. But so it's relatively new. It is like a very recent thing in the world. And kind of the super lyrium part of it is that it doesn't appear only underground, and you don't need to be an incredibly specialized dwarf to mine it. It kind of just grows everywhere. So it is mostly all over the surface of the southern part of Thedas, and it like pops up in like crystalline nodes, just like the blue stuff does. And they grow kind of everywhere. And it is growing across the landscape pretty rapidly, like taking root and then becomes like really, really hard to get rid of. So it starts to take over the landscape in a much, much worse way than the blue lyrium. Like the blue lyrium is just only underground and seems to be like a crystalline structure that has been there forever. And this stuff is like,
sound like that was propagating.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, the red stuff is though. Like it is spreading out like crazy.
Well, that's spooky.
Yeah, it's real bad. It's real bad.
What does it do?
So, what it does is all of the normal bad stuff that normal lyrium does, but it also just even being close to it. So the lethal bit of lyrium is that if you like normal lyrium. Is if you are a mage and you go near it, you get to have like cool psychotic breaks and bad things are happening. And then if you touch the raw stuff, you just die. And then bad stuff happens if you are not a mage, but generally not as bad as just dying. Red stuff, though, if you are within like an exposure to it for a longish amount of time, you will like slowly go through gradual psychological and like even physical changes.
Oh, so this is like your chemical weapon lyrium.
Yeah. And it is a chemical weapon in a way, because we're getting real deep into Dragon Age now. So it is believed and then discovered through, I think, Inquisition, that red lyrium is actually normal blue lyrium that has been tainted by the blight.
Okay, that was what I was wondering.
Yeah, so
the spreading was kind of a hint there.
Yeah, and you're familiar with Origin and the Blight and everything, right?
Yes, I remember most of that, I think.
Okay, so the very, very brief refresher. When we talk about the Blight, we talk about two different things in Dragon Age. They're related, but slightly different. So the first is what is referred to in the first couple of games as the taint, and is like a dangerous like corruption or something that grows in the deep roads, and then it's carried to the surface either by darkspawn or more typically rats, like real plague stuff. And it's like a corruption that will ultimately kill people or kind of like zombify them into ghouls. The second one is the capital B blight, which is when the darkspawn, which are kind of like a subterranean race that's like a mishmash of orcs and goblins, kind of. They have the taint flowing through their body, and they are hive mind controlled by an archdemon, which is one of Tevinter's old draconic gods who has been also touched by the blight. They can kind of like the hive mind command all of the darkspawn, and then they all surge to the surface in this like black goo fueled crusade to like basically wipe out the world for the, you know, the sins of man, I guess. And there have been five capital B blights. So the first is being the founding of the Grey Wardens way, way long ago. The fifth is the one that you fight and end in Dragon Age Origins. There's also stuff in Veilguard, but I'm not going to talk about that here.
Fair enough.
We'll have to do a Veilguard thing because like a all of these
spoiler cast kind of.
Yeah, there's
version.
Yeah, that might be a good addendum to this. That once I finish that game, we will come back and talk about it because there are revelations as it pertains to these specific things that we are talking about.
Cool.
But when we're talking about Red Lyrium, we're kind of talking about a mixture of the two. So the Red Lyrium itself has been tainted by the taint of the black goo blight, which is the evidence that we kind of used in the past episode to validate that Lyrium is in fact alive in some way, because inanimate things cannot be infected by the blight. So there's something going on with like life and what is going on with Lyrium. And then also people who end up being tainted by Red Lyrium in some way end up having the same effects of being able to be hive mind controlled by the archdemon, and they kind of function.
Oh
yeah. So they function similarly to darkspawn.
Yikes.
Yes. Which leads us into what this mini is actually about. This mini is not actually about Red Lyrium. This mini is about, if you extrapolate out what I have just said, and then look at where we went last episode, you may see where this is going. But today's episode is actually about Red Templars, not Red Lyrium.
Oh boy.
So,
you
have a bunch of drug-addicted Templars who need their super soldier serum to keep all of the mages down. And what happens if you give them just a little bit of the red stuff, and then maybe there's a blight and there's someone who can control them, and then it all goes
maybe
back.
Maybe you
from
get
there.
Like Nazgul. Yeah.
Kind of. So that idol I mentioned at the beginning, it's in Dragon Age 2, and kind of through some twists and turns of the story, I think you're betrayed by Varric's brother, who is already like blight controlled and tainted to some degree. He takes it up to the surface again and sells it to the Knight Commander of the Templars within Kirkwall, which is where that game takes place. You manage to make your way out of the Deep Roads, but in that amount of time, the Knight Commander has forged that idol and the staff into a sword, and then uses that power. And then, you know, bad things happen. You have a boss battle. She turns into a giant statue of petrified Red Lyrium. But this is kind of the big major thing that happens in Dragon Age 2 and will carry on into Inquisition and a little bit into the Veilguard. In Kirkwall, some shit was going down. And the Knight Commander, before being tainted by Red Lyrium, but possibly being tainted by Red Lyrium, invokes the right of annulment, which is the like massacre the mages of this place rule that the Templars have, kind of like exerting their like church cop role of like, these guys are getting out of control. We need to take them all down. So orders the Templars to kill all of the mages in Kirkwall.
We order 66 of the mages.
I really did order 66 of the mages, yes.
Okay.
As expected, this is a bad thing and does not do great. It also ends up having one of the head mages of that circle of magi potentially attempting to kill the Pope, but we'll kind of gloss over that.
Sometimes you gotta kill the Pope.
But this tension here between the mages and the Templars is what sets off the main conflict that goes on in the background of Inquisition, or is kind of like the beginning of Inquisition, and that's the Mage-Templar War. I don't know, this is like such a weird, subtle thing to remember, but it's stuck in my mind forever. When you load up Dragon Age Inquisition for the first time, and you hit, you're looking at the menu, you can see that there are, there's two lines of people who are walking towards like a temple in the distance. Does this ring a bell to you?
Yes, I remember this part. I remember the next part as well.
Okay. This is one of my favorite things. Hit new game. Yes. Yeah, so you hit new game, and then there is a giant flash on the screen as if a nuclear bomb has gone off. And that is like the inciting incident of all of this. Like that creates this breach in the veil, which, if you recall, is the thing, the veil that is holding the Fade back, which is the kind of like cognitive realm of where you go when you dream, and also where demons and dead people are. It's this barrier between the spirit world and the physical realm. And there is this great bomb that goes off that kind of nukes the Templar and Mage peace summit that is going on at the this like Holy of Holy Temples. And that kicks off what is actually going on in Inquisition, which is when the main antagonist of that, Corypheus, who is either one of the Tevinter Old Gods or is a magister who went to the Golden City, which we will talk about a different time, basically has control of Darkspawn and then begins feeding the Templars, who are basically decimated by this terrorist attack that he orchestrated, and starts feeding them red lyrium to make them more powerful and more strong and more better to defeat the mage menace. Little do they know they are being, you know,
Palpatined.
They're being Palpatined in like real monstrous ways.
Yeah.
So yeah, the Templars end up taking the bait on this one because they are very much being destroyed, and all the stuff that was going on in Inquisition means that like they are on their heels. Like the Pope has been killed in that opening cutscene, and then their forces have been decimated just as much as the mages have. And it's like presumed that a mage is the person who set it all off, so that they're out for vengeance. And the typical lyrium stuff is still true with red lyrium when it comes to Templars. So it like improves their powers. It gives them new ones, so they have like superhuman strength, and you know they can fight a group several times larger than them, and all of that stuff. But they end up going through a series of stages of exposure to the red lyrium. So normally with the blue stuff, so long as they kind of keep their lyrium stocks going, they just have these superhuman powers, and then we just don't talk about the withdrawal symptoms of it. But as as they deal with red lyrium, it gets a bit more intense as it goes.
Yeah, really hand wave away the side effects this time around.
No, and it starts to really, really show. So there's like basic levels of like exposure to it. So just being around red lyrium, and this kind of goes for most people, and not just Templars, but the Templars get the good stuff because they end up being the most exposed to it typically. So, you know, just exposure, just being around the stuff makes you a bit more paranoid, heightened possessiveness, or you know, just an increased penchant for violence. You know, nothing too bad. Just get around the red goo and bad stuff goes bad.
Yeah, just your standard fantasy roid rage.
Yeah. And then we move to the next step, which is called manifestation. And that's when you're just kind of always in pain. You look sickly, kind of pale flesh. Your veins start to pulse red with the delirium. And you are described as resembling a living corpse. And your eyes start to turn a little bit red, glowing a little bit red.
Got full Sith face.
Yeah. Real Sith face. Like real like Knights of the Old Republic 1 Sith face, kind of.
Yeah.
Minus the cat eyes, I guess. And then for Templars, it becomes like, this is the part where they start to get their really enhanced strength, which then kind of replaces their pain, right? Like they get a higher tolerance for pain because they can, you know, be more strong, I guess. And this is, again, the return to Dragon Age, having this thing with songs. So they're able to hear the song of the delirium. But this is kind of mentioned by one of your companions in Inquisition. The song is different this time. It's like similar, but it is slightly different or deeper, a little bit more. Yeah, different, a little bit more menacing.
Is it because it's a big dragon beastie?
I kind of, again, there's revelations to be had about all of this. But the source of what that song is kind of unknown, because again, this is the, we're having a little bit of overlap here, because the Templars, they inject lyrium dust into their bodies to get these superhuman powers. The wardens, the gray wardens, the people who fight the darkspawn, they end up going through a ritual called the joining, which is, I think it's a low level exposure to the blight taint. And if they survive, they become gray wardens. If they die, they don't, obviously. But they both have songs associated with them. So there's something going on here where the blight has a song and the delirium has a song. And now red lyrium, combining those two songs, is also creating either a third one or a variation of the two.
Do we know the significance of this yet? Or just that it is different?
I do. We'll talk about it later.
Okay.
They have now answered this to some degree.
But up through Inquisition, no.
Correct, yeah. I don't think they... It's like alluded to in Inquisition, I think, but it's much more outright in Veilguard.
Okay.
And it has an interesting answer, which we will talk about at a different time.
All right.
So those are the basic levels. Typically, if you reach the manifesting stage, odds are you're probably on the way out, unless you are a Templar. Sometimes you'll be able to make it, but for the most part, once you hit the manifestation stage, it's just like a normie person. Odds are you don't have much longer to live.
Yeah, that seems pretty wraith-like.
Yeah, and it does only get worse from there.
Oh, good. That's as expected. The end. Of our descent into red madness.
There are two more stages.
Two more power levels here.
Yep. The next one is just called advanced. So advanced exposure of red lyrium is it's when the lyrium begins to crystallize within and sprout from the subject's body. So you'll start to have crystal spikes growing from you, and you know, this is when you start to see Templars emerging with new powers and abilities.
But also, like, crystal spores.
Yeah. And, like, in internal and external ways. Like, it's like lyrium is fusing to bones and overgrowing their lungs. And you're really getting into the, you know, spreading into the brain and growing into their actual flesh.
Is there like some amount of attrition that happens here? Like, are we losing a percentage of these guys every time we level up?
I'm not sure. I think typically for Templars, it's just kind of like at some point you will hit these stages at different speeds. And you, this there's also this advanced stage is where you get into the video gaminess of it, where there's like 4-ish different Red Templar enemies that you run into. So you start to get your unit diversification going on here. So you have your, what do you have? You have your horrors, I think is what they're called. And they're the ones who are the ranged guys. They'll shoot red lyrium crystals at people and then kind of like explode lyrium in gas forms. They're basically red lyrium needlers as people.
Okay. Yeah. That's right.
The other one is like just normal Templar knights, which are, they start to have red lyrium lightning that they will use, and that they'll kind of attack you more in like a physical kind of way instead of the distance.
Interesting. So they get magic.
They get magic of some variety. Yeah. That's weird, huh?
Huh.
Yeah.
They're cool with that?
So at this point, I don't think they're uncool with anything so long as the one in charge is cool with it.
They do have that vibe.
Yeah. The next one is the Red Templar Shadows, which are your rogues. They are giant spikes of, like, their arms are just giant spikes of red lyrium. So they kind of got cool sword arms. And they have invisibility powers and do ambushes. Also, more magic, I guess.
Sensing a theme here.
Yep. And then there's the behemoths are kind of like the last main one that I remember. They are, besides being big old boss beasties, they are able to create like actual red lyrium growths in the ground. So they'll like make walls out of red lyrium to trap you in, or they kind of like spread it across the world as they walk around. So they are like actual foot soldiers spreading red lyrium across most of Thedas.
Does there appear to be like any kind of aim or goal, or is this somewhat random?
It's guided because, kind of going back to the blight of it all. So they are all controlled at this point. Like how much control Corypheus, the archdemon, has over the Red Templars is kind of unknown. But it's also basically presumed that since it is blighted, that it's kind of like a full control. Like they are just foot soldiers being mind controlled into doing their bidding.
It's definitely not 0%.
Yeah. And I honestly can't remember. I think the end goal of Inquisition is to bring down the veil, but man, I couldn't tell you how that game ended.
I don't have a clue. I don't think I made it through that one.
I remember what you do. I don't remember what you were stopping.
Yeah. BioWare, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so it's basically they are tainted Templars that just kind of march across the world, and you fight them as you go. And then there's the last stage here, the last stage of red lyrium exposure. And This was also kind of alluded to with the Knight Commander at Kirkwall, but your body is completely overtaken by the lyrium, and it simply consumes you and kills you.
Are you like a crystalline statue?
You are just a crystalline statue.
That's pretty good.
And this is,
I don't hate that.
This is the part where Templars become those behemoths. So they go from being normal foot soldiers, and now they are just big old beasties that have incredible strength, but they are completely unrecognizable as humans. And it says here, on their page, they exist in constant agony, which is just a grand old way to go out.
Weird, evil rock golem creature.
Yeah, yeah, basically. They do look like just giant evil rock golem. The design of all of the Red Lyrium stuff is pretty incredible, though, because for a series that has a lot going on with blood magic and everything, I feel like the Red Lyrium is just blood magic, but if it's just like frozen blood magic, like everyone is just real grim shards of frozen blood stuff, and it sucks. It mega sucks.
Everything sucks here is kind of the theme of Dragon Age.
It truly is. As like nice and positive as so much of that game is, like literally everything sucks.
It's just like, this is grim.
Yeah. Yeah, I just sent you a picture in the chat of the behemoth, and it's mostly a humanoid shaped thing, and then you can see a guy with a little helmet in the middle of just an entire crystal burst.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's gnarly.
Yeah. It's pretty messed up.
He's gonna have a tough time getting through doorways.
He makes his own doorways.
Oh, okay, fair. That's a perk, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, that is Red Lyrium. You will, throughout the game, you'll come across kind of these Red Lyrium growths everywhere, and you'll actually see it. It will corrode. It kind of works like rust almost on blue lyrium. So it will kind of move its way and corrupt its way through good old blue lyrium as well. So it also destroys the good stuff as it kind of works its way across the landscape.
It's got like a Tron virus kind of vibe almost too.
Ooh, yeah, yeah. I can see that. And kind of most notably as it comes to Red Lyrium and how like what the outcome is of all of this. So I think at the end of Inquisition, you end up closing the breaches in the veil that let all of the let Corypheus through and all of his demon army and everything. So you kind of patch up the holes in the veil to hold them back after you defeat Big Scary Guy. But kind of importantly, the Veil Guard takes place in Northern Thedas. You don't even go to any of the places that are in Inquisition, because I think it still sucks there. Like it's still really rough, and then things are still like, because of the inciting event of the Veil Guard, things continue to get worse. So it's not like you solve the magical riddle and close up the portal and all this Red Lyrium goes away. Like, this is still a problem in Southern Thedas.
Does that get resolved over the course of the next one, or are we in store for another cliffhanger?
I'm not sure. It's not a big, like the Veil Guard is primarily about the Blight, the origins of the Blight, and also there's some bits about Lyrium in there, but I don't think that I have not seen a ton right now besides just like weird cult stuff about Red Lyrium, but there's specifically only been two Templars on screen, and they are all dissociated from the goings on of the past games about mages and Templars, mostly because this is kind of the split between the 14th century Catholic Church, where there were two popes for a bit there. You're in the north, so the north has its own chantry, which is a bit more mages rule, and then there are also Templars, versus the southern bits where there is a church order who has their police military force, and then they kind of subjugate and maintain the mages.
Varying degrees of fascism between the two implementations.
Yeah, fascism and corruption is much more obvious in this one, in the north. The south, it's kind of masquerading as a police force, but in a different kind of fascism. But yeah, I don't know if the Red Lyrium crisis stuff ends up being resolved in the Veilguard. It has not yet, but
okay.
I can also see it being resolved, kind of where they're going. It seems like just having finished Act 1 in like a couple hours into Act 2, I think that game is setting itself up for a good old like reset of the status quo by the end. But we'll see.
That would make sense from like a business standpoint, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like there are standpoint that tracks.
The amount of shit going on in the Dragon Age universe within a span of 20 years is crippling when you think about like all of these different things happening at the same time and like trying to maintain a society. Like it's wild.
Do you think they like nail that believably, or would you have expected everything, like should the Archdemon have won by now sort of thing?
It's weird. I think Dragon Age has just like a strange idea of scale and kind of communication. Like it's hard to know how much the normal people know about the Archdemon and how bad the like Fifth Blight was. And you'll see it in Inquisition where like breaches are opening up around the landscape. But for the most part, I don't think they're opening in cities. And the Kirkwall situation is perhaps just a one-off. I think it also has like the scale problem too, where it's hard to tell, just, you know, the video game stuff, but the cities are not incredibly populated. So it's hard to know like how many thousands of Grey Wardens are there? Like, how big are the Blights to kind of determine, like, should the Archdemon have won already or not? Like,
gotcha.
Kind of feels like they should have, but also, like, are there millions of humans? Are there hundreds of thousands of them? Like, you know, it's tough to tell.
Fair enough.
It does seem odd in a kind of in a Lord of the Rings kind of way too. Like, I feel like if you could just turn on the orc pits, there's not really a reason that Mordor should ever lose. Like they just have the print unstoppable orcs all the time. So
yeah, I mean they were winning. That's true. Fair.
They were winning. See, that's all it takes is a band of just happy-go-lucky, fun-loving, interesting characters who also like to get down sometimes with one another to come and screw up your plan.
And like a poorly designed exhaust port is also required.
Oh yeah, 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 for sure. That's incredibly important.
Yeah, you do need one crippling yet relatively exposed flaw.
Yeah, but like no one would ever actually do it.
Well, no, it's just your one crippling yet exposed flaw.
But yeah, that is Red Lyrium, the Sith version of Jedi Lyrium from last episode, and the twisted friends that it makes for our Templar buds.
Fun stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just don't. Maybe it's actually the advice with Red Lyrium. Just don't. That's just what goes up on the like state sponsored billboard.
Yeah. The,
just,
I guess
just don't.
That is something I didn't bring up previously, is that, you know, you do in Veilguard, you receive a letter from someone down there and said, hey, we founded Red Lyrium Dare and we're working our way through and getting the streets clean from this Red Lyrium stuff. Just now they're on to Nuke.
Yeah. I'm sure that'll go well too.
But yeah, that is a mini episode. I think technically this is the same length as our last one, but whatever, who cares?
Probably.
It's our rules, we made it
how
up.
How we split it up.
Exactly.
There's a good chunk of RuneScape at the beginning. We could package that separately if you needed to.
We would never do that. RuneScape is always main topic.
That's true. It is now that you're roped in.
Yeah, now it's both of us.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That is an episode.
Well, I'll end this for the fifth time.
Yeah, we'll just close it out now. thank you for listening to this installment of Codex. You can find all of our stuff on our website, gordonhamburger.com. Social links are in the show notes, and you can also listen to our wonderful friend Nicholas Cahill. He puts out music on his SoundCloud. He's the guy who did the intro and outro music. So if you're into that, go listen to that stuff. And I think we'll be back next week with another Codex entry. But until then, we will talk to you soon. See you later. Yeah. Don't do Red Lyrium.
Don't. Just don't.
Just don't.